Hello, everyone. Welcome to Beanstalk 20 on 20 in our interview series. So our interview series is nominated as 20 minutes with inspirational people from the international fresh food sectors. It's never 20 minutes, it always turns into 30, 40 minutes because the people that we meet, as per James today, are so interesting. So we wanted to catch up with them. Was a trip over my lead. We wanted to catch up with James Lipscomb, who's the CEO of the Chesford Group for a couple of reasons. James very kindly came on a great broadcast that we did. Oh, can you remember, James? Was it October, September time?
Yeah, something like that.
On food service with the great Peter Batman. And I was so impressed with James as to how James had, here comes that rubbishy word, pivoted his business through 2020. So I made the request of James back then. James, can we do an interview with you in early January on the basis that everything will have calmed down? Oh my God, James. Well, here we are. So let's give James the big rah-rah for all the folk on Facebook, all the folk on LinkedIn, and for YouTube, and also the people listening to the podcast. So as I said, James is the CEO of the Chesford Group of Companies, and they operate the largest chain of fish and chip shops and restaurants in the UK and employ in excess of 600 people, James. That's amazing.
Yes, that's right.
So your brands currently are Fish and Chicken, Bankers and Churchill's. And the group has been named previously as one of the 1,000 companies to inspire Britain by the London Stock Exchange due to its fast growth and has been praised for its dynamic leadership. So James is a young entrepreneur. Oh, look at him. He's young, with a proven track record of opening and buying businesses and increasing both the turnover and profitability and creating businesses with family cultures where people can thrive. He's the proponent of the triple bottom line. Wait for this, everyone. It's lovely. He's the proponent of the triple bottom line: people, profit and planet. So as I said earlier, we wanted to hear about his group's transformation during the intense 2020. And just in our green room, James was saying how frenetic it is at the moment. But James, I know you're so busy and it's so great to have you step out of what you're doing at the moment. Whew, where do we start with this? Well, can you just give us a bit of background to the group and let's just roll through 2020 and what you're seeing in 2021.
Yeah, wow. Okay. So here we go. So yes, thanks Max, thanks for the intro. I'm not sure I look that much younger with the gray hairs and
he is 18
and the prolific wrinkles that seem to be coming out day by day. As Max said, CEO of the Chesford Group. So we currently operate 40 stores around the southeast, southwest and south of the UK, mixture of takeaways and restaurants. We were very lucky to be able to continue trading through, you know, the lockdown period in March. Our journey's kind of been quite different, really, in that sort of certainly when the Prime Minister Boris Johnson came out on the 23rd of March and announced a complete lockdown, we actually closed our businesses down in their entirety because we just were not happy, Max, that we had the right health and safety risk assessments in place and we could really confidently keep our people safe. Then what we did is we instigated our Phoenix plan, which really focused on three things to get our business back up and running. And that was making sure we could communicate to customers through social media, looking to pivot and invest in technology. And that pivot was mainly through delivery. Just to sort of give you a little bit of a flavor, pre-COVID, delivery and click and collect made up 17% of our weekly sales channels. Okay. We're now sitting at 48% of sales, which is just a huge change in our business. We had 20 delivery vehicles pre-COVID. We now have over 70. Delivery currently represents around about 28% of our weekly sales, with click and collect sitting at around about 20. So it's been a huge change for us. Obviously, our restaurants haven't been able to open and trade throughout certain periods. And so that's been a real challenge. And then just the third thing that we really wanted to focus on, obviously, is making sure we had the right risk assessments and health and safety, safe ways of working in place to make sure we could try and, you know, create an environment which is as safe as possible for our teams and our customers.
James, can I just interrupt? Just out of curiosity,
sure.
If there was a parallel universe, March 2020 didn't happen, do you think that there would have been this organic growth for your business anyway towards online, as has been reported by some other food outlets, or is this just created a new beginning for you and the group?
Yeah, I mean, it's just sped up the evolution of the food delivery without a doubt, probably by 3 to 4 years. We had plans. We were already doing delivery probably in about 20% of our sites, and we have plans, you know, that year to continue that trend. And certainly those delivery sites that we were, those sites that we were putting delivery into, we were seeing a turnover bounce of around about 10%. So, you know, it was proving to be successful and work well for us. And what we were finding, interestingly, Max, was that it wasn't cannibalizing walk-in sales. That 10% was all additional customers that were coming to us. So obviously our fear was, hang on a minute, you know, our takeaway customers going to stop walking in and getting a delivery, which at that point was actually a far less profitable revenue stream than a walk-in customer. And we've been on a real journey with delivery. And so just kind of in summary and answering your question, it's definitely sped things forward probably 3 years to where we were going to be.
Okay. And let's go back a little bit. Who is James? Tell us about yourself.
James is a fish and chip fanatic. This is a family business. My father started our business in 1971. I joined the business in 2000 after completing my A-levels, spent 4 years working in our stores, training assistant manager, operations manager, warehouse manager, you name it, I've done it. Normal story. I took the opportunity in 2012 to buy my brothers and sisters out of the business, which was an interesting experience. I can assure you of that through a management buy-in. So I did that, which then really gave clarity over the future of the business, which, you know, really excited me. Obviously, it's always been a bit of a dream of mine, really, to do that. And then I basically took the controlling share from my father in 2016 and really just sort of got my head down and got on with, you know, paying debt back as well as trying to grow the business at the same time. So it's been quite a journey up to today.
And again, if March 2020 hadn't have happened, what was your plan? What was your destiny as you saw it before this tsunami came in 2020?
I mean, we were in a good shape. We were, as I said, you know, we're planning to carry on rolling delivery out. We were seeing a 10% bounce in those shops that we put that into. We were actually running 10% up like for like anyway in January and February. And we were having a pretty, you know, strong start to the year. The weather was fairly mild. February was a bit stormy, but didn't really affect us. And we were really excited about what was coming up. We had acquisitions in the pipeline. We were due to complete on a store in Essex in April. We were due to open a site in Eastbourne in May. We also had another location in Essex, which we were looking to take on towards the end of that year. And so, you know, the year was looking really strong. We had a good pipeline of stores coming. So, you know, we certainly entered that year in luckily a good financial shape as well, with, you know, strong cash reserves. Because, when I was looking at what our cash flow forecasts were looking like when, you know, we had to completely shut our business, you know, you're losing, you know, $500,000 a week in revenue, you know, burning through cash. They look pretty frightening, to be honest with you. So I was very pleased that we had those cash reserves in place.
Okay, so you're in early 2020, you're on this sort of proverbial burning deck. And it's always been said that when people are on the burning deck, they go one of two ways. They, in business, they either start selling, doing something differently, or they go with it. You definitely started selling and pivoting the business. So again, just without trying to break any confidence, because it's fascinating the way that you described it on our food service broadcast. What did you and your team do when you realized you're on the sort of proverbial burning deck and you needed to get off it bloody quickly? Excuse my
friend. So I'll say we did a couple of things. So one thing that I realized really early on, and actually this came up in my managing director's review, is that, you know, I think back in March, I just said to him, I said, look, Paul, I said, nobody's coming to save us. We have to save ourselves. Wow. And that's when we were really looking at, you know, I was looking at cash flow forecasts. I was looking at running out of cash within 3 months. And, you know, I'm on phone calls to banks. I think one of the things that we did, Max, is that we acted so fast across every facet of our business in terms of making sure we communicated to our teams as clearly as we possibly could do what was going on. When we had to furlough every single person in the business, I phoned every member of the management team in our stores personally from my office at home to do that, because I felt that I wanted to do that. You know, it's quite an emotional time, to be honest. So, you know, you're going through that, you're trying to negotiate, you know, bank facilities over and above what you currently have. You know, the other thing that we did really quickly is we acted really fast with the CBILS loan. So we were probably one of the first businesses in the UK to be approved for that. So speed and communication was absolutely everything. And then also just the pivot to delivery and click and collect. When we closed our business down the 23rd of March, we reopened two of our busiest stores first week of April, really just to see how things were going to go, because at that point we weren't allowed to serve any walk-in customers. And what you've got to remember is we were serving basically 42,000 walk-in customers a week at that point. So to then suddenly say, right guys, not allowed to serve walk-in customers. Exactly. So then what we found, it was really interesting, was that because we had that Phoenix strategy of focusing on those three things, you know, social media, technology, frictionless service through delivery and click and collect, and through health and safety, it really meant then, Max, that we utilized social media to get the word out and say, we are reopening. These are the channels that you can order through. You know, contact us, you know, whenever you like, and we're here to serve you. So, I mean, it was amazing time, really, when I look back now, because, you know, we opened the first two stores in that week, and we were just blown away by the takings through delivery and click and collect. Really? You know, what we did do is we used a click and collect system with a company called PrioDay, and they're a third party technology provider. And that what that allows you to do, and what that system allows you to do, is to basically create a just in sequence supply chain management model within your fish and chip shop, which sounds a bit technical, but basically, cut long story short, what it allows you to do is sequence the amount of orders that you can take in any one time. One of the problems that you have with the likes of Deliveroo, Uber, and Just Eat is that you cannot control the amount of orders that are coming into you at any one point. So therefore, as a business, how do you try and make sure that you can offer a really great service when you have all these orders coming in, when you don't know how many orders are coming in? How can you make it as profitable as possible when you have either drivers sitting around not doing anything, or not enough drivers, because the amount of tickets you've got coming through is a real challenge to manage? So what we did is we partnered with this company really quickly. They already provided us with our click and collect app. And then what that then allowed us to do is to create this just in sequence supply chain management model, which then allowed us to create a really efficient service where we could deliver exceptional customer service for the customer whilst trying to make sure we could remain as profitable as we possibly can. So then what we did is we had to retrain all of our teams to understand how this system worked. You know, one of the biggest problems we had, Max, and I know we've talked about this before, but was actually just trying to get hold of delivery vehicles. So, you know, as I said earlier, I've suddenly went from 20 vehicles. Suddenly I needed basically, you know, oh, crikey, 70 delivery vehicles within a 3-4 month slot. So how the hell did you do that?
James, weren't you using some of your own vehicles?
I had to use my mum's at one point. I had to lend my mum's car. She wasn't very impressed. But anyway, so I had to borrow mum's car because we just couldn't get the delivery vehicles. I was using my car. I was using, you know, my wife's car. You just do what you need to do, right? And the managers were using their cars. We just did whatever we needed to do to survive. And in, you know, in a perverse way, actually, it was almost like running a startup again. It was incredibly enjoyable. It really was, you know, that adrenaline rush and the way that all the teams came together. There was a real sense of, you know, we're in this together and we're going to fight for each other. And I'm very fortunate to have the culture that we have. And that doesn't happen overnight. You need to create that culture and you need to put a lot of work into that culture over a long period of time. But I'm very fortunate to have the culture that we have. And ultimately, James, our people saved us, you know.
James, just to pull you up on that, I love this line about the triple bottom line, people, profit, planet. Yeah. People. And we've discussed this so many times before on other broadcasts that there just does seem to be this seismic shift of stuff shareholder value. It's all about doing good, about having a sustainable business, about being a business that people want to be associated with and want to work for. And you can obviously see that with yourselves.
Yeah, I mean, we're very fortunate. You know, we've got people who've worked for our business for 35 years. You know, I still work in our stores every Friday night. I cook fish and chips in our shops every single Friday without fail. I think that's really important. You've got to understand the challenges that are being, you know, faced on the shop floor, because otherwise how the hell are you going to be able to make the right decisions for the business as CEO? And that's fundamental, I think, to our success, and has been over, you know, over a period of time, is that, you know, we know what goes on in the shop floor. We understand some of the challenges that those guys are facing. And also, you know, our core values and our core purpose is defending the future of fish and chips. And our core values are save, which is strive to be better and do the right thing, go above and beyond for our customers, value and believe in each other, and empower each other to be extraordinary. And that's something which we really shout about and we believe in, and we make sure that we espouse in everything that we do as a business.
Well done. And on the social media side, do you think it was actually to your advantage that you are a local business? You have a lot of businesses, but they're all local in those areas. You have the monosyllabic big chains. For some reason, I keep on getting a bi-daily email from the CEO of McDonald's. I don't know what I've done to gain that, but it's to me, James, it just seems very... it's just orchestrated in such a banal manner, because they're just a machine. You guys are a local business in your local areas, your family owned. So the social media side of it, which platforms did you use? Because someone's WhatsApp me just asked that question of you.
Yeah, sure. So we use Facebook predominantly, and the way that I will answer this is, you know who your customer is, you know, what age demographic is your customer, what is the avatar of what your perfect customer looks like, you know, what's their vernacular, what do they talk about, who are they, how old are they, what's their job, where they work, and all that kind of good stuff, because then allows you to decide which social media platform you should be on. So, you know, I very much, you know, very broadly speaking, I sort of believe, you know, millennials are more Instagram focused people in their kind of 30, probably sort of 40 plus of Facebook. And then you sort of, now it's TikTok for your sort of, you know, your 12, 16 year olds to kind of 20 year olds. So, you know, very broadly. So yeah, we really doubled down on Facebook. And as you quite rightly say, you know, what we did is we kept things super local, super community focused. So we created a community hero, and effectively allowed our customers to vote for their local community hero. And we delivered free fish and chips to those customers on a Saturday night. And some of the stories, oh my goodness, mate, it was so inspiring to hear the way that people went above and beyond. And that just wasn't for NHS workers. That could be for anybody in the local community that was making a real difference. And that worked really, really well. And it wasn't done in a, you know, I don't know, in a commercial way. And it was never meant to be that. It was just done in a, you know, we want to support our local communities because people are going through hell right now. And how can we do our bit? And if it just means delivering food for somebody who's been working really hard and just come off a 12-hour shift and had a horrific time as people are going through now, and we can do that, well, then let's try and put smiles back on people's faces.
Well done. And there's a number of Facebook courses I've seen or attended over the years, and they say the same thing, that you'll get the likes of Audi or thinking of a clothing brand, Nike, just bombarding you with stuff. But when you want to find a plumber, why doesn't a local plumber use Facebook? Because you're more likely to actually hone in on something, someone on a local basis. So I think that's inspired that you went for that local area, and to do the hero element is again inspired. The person that asked the question just asked another question. Do you do all your social media in-house, or have you farmed it out? Has it been difficult to set up? Has it been difficult to run?
Yeah, so the answer to that is we manage it in-house, first of all. I prefer to do it that way. Was it difficult to set up? No, we employed somebody who had, you know, a lot of social media experience and digital experience to come into our business and teach us how to do it. Am I learning every day about social media? Absolutely. It's changing so fast. Facebook changed the way in which their system, is made and is used by consumers. So it's a challenge. You have to consistently stay on top of it. There's no doubt about that. But what I would say for us is that it's worked really well. And especially, you know, in the initial lockdown, I actually, across Thursday, Friday, Saturday night, what I wanted to try and do is in the first lockdown, throughout any lockdowns, is make sure we're there for our customers when they need us. So I doubled down on social, and I actually put two people. I actually had our receptionist who is pretty savvy with social media, and I asked her to pick up on that. So we had our social media manager and her and myself covering social media across Thursday, Friday, Saturday night, so we could come back to customers instantly. And the volume of inquiries we were having, especially in April, May was just exponential to compared to what we're used to having. And so on a Friday, we'd have messages flying in. How do I use your click and collect app? How do I get delivery? Where do I need to go to place the delivery? I've got a problem with my order, you know, so on and so forth. So I just wanted to make sure just then we offered incredible customer service. And we've taken that on now to the way that we do it. We have social media coverage 24/7 because our business is opposed at 10, but you know, from basically 9 a.m. till 10 o'clock at night now, we have full social media coverage 7 days a week, which is absolutely fantastic for a business our size, because we recognize, you know, that's how customers want to communicate with us, and you need to be all over that.
And James, the app, when in 2020 did you bring in the app?
So 2020, so just purely the click and collect app, we started that 2018 and we started to roll out that to our stores. And interestingly, what we're finding is customers were spending double on our click and collect app as they were in store, which was incredible for us.
James, have you got your phone there? Can you just quickly show us the screen?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not going to work in the podcast, everyone. So I'll jump to his phone. James is just getting his phone.
Yeah, I'll just show you quickly.
And was that quite easy to set up? Did you manage to find a provider for it who could?
Yeah, we did. We did, as you say. Yeah, we did. And it was pretty easy. What I would say is we worked really hard to basically get the app up and running. So this is how the app works basically here. So that's the home screen. And you can just, depending on whether or not, you know, it's a Churchill's or Fish and Chicken, I touched our Churchill's app. Oh, whoops. But that basically just allows you to just to click on to delivery. We're not taking orders at the moment because that delivery function's closed. But what it will allow you to do is just to basically go in there, and you can just then choose on the home screen whether or not you're going to have click and collect delivery or order at table.
Fantastic.
Okay. So yeah, so that works really well. And the good thing about that is there's no commission, which is a bit of a game changer. Off air, Max and I were talking about commission rates, but delivery.
Let's just talk that through, because in the previous broadcast we did with Peter Backman, we had a lovely lady who runs a chain of Indian restaurants, and I was astounded that Deliveroo charge in excess of 30% commission. So as we're going through. As you go through 2020, I presume it was just the de facto thing. Oh my crikey, we need to get this product out. We need to get the food. We'll set up an account with Deliveroo. Was that how you proceeded, James? And then you found the terms of business and realized that a lot of people deploying Deliveroo were getting mugged.
Yeah, I mean, what we were doing is we were using Deliveroo and Uber already in some of our stores. So pre COVID, didn't like working with them personally. Just Eat are a good partner of ours and continue to be a good partner of ours. But Deliveroo and Uber, for me, there was no partnership approach to the way they went about things. So Uber Eats charged 35% commission to deliver your food, and that's you've got to put VAT on top of that as well. And Deliveroo charged 35% on top as well of the prices that you need to charge. So yeah, it's incredibly expensive to do that. So what we sort of took a bit of a different view, Max, on delivery, and we said to ourselves, actually, what we want to do is we want to control our own destiny. At the moment, sort of pre-COVID, we were looking at Deliveroo owned the customer. They owned all of that data. We couldn't communicate directly with that customer if that customer had a complaint. Deliveroo would simply take the money out of our account and wouldn't even tell us what the complaint was about. And I'm a great believer that I can turn a customer around if they have a bad experience. It's going to happen. It happens from time to time. But not even being able to contact that customer directly, I had a real problem with. And also, I had real problems understanding how their business models worked. You know, they were losing hundreds of millions of pounds a year. And, you know, what I was really concerned with is the only way they can make those business models work is from that 35% commission jumping to, say, 40, 45, 50%.
Really?
And then, yeah, that's the only way that I could see their business models working, because they weren't profitable as they were. So we as a team, we decided to take a longer view. We said, right, you know, all we want to do is to be able to control our own destiny. What can I control? I can control the technology. I can control that customer experience, and I can also have access to that customer data, which allows me to market to that customer and also communicate to that customer in any which way I want. So we decided to go on a journey, and you name a different way of doing delivery, we've tried it. And where we've ended up is basically we now lease the vehicles directly. We use a third-party piece of technology to manage all of our deliveries for us, and where customers can pay as well on that app, which you've just seen on the screen. And also, we then employ our drivers directly from the business as well. So what all that means is that I can completely manage that whole consumer experience from the app that they're ordering from to the moment they get that food at the door. And then that then allows me to control the future destiny of our business. And so that's a decision that we made. And we very much took a long-term view on this. Could I increase my top line sales by turning Deliveroo and Uber on tomorrow? Yeah, I probably could. But actually, that's not what it's about for me. It's about a journey, and it's about taking control of that whole situation. And that's what we've managed to achieve now.
It's people, profit, and planet. Keep going.
So we dropped Deliveroo and Uber on the 14th of December. We no longer use them. We do partner with Just Eat, and as I said, they're a good partner of ours. We use their some of their technology for customers to be able to order on their website, and that works well as well. But certainly the use of our own app and being able to control our delivery has been an absolute game changer for us. And we've managed to make it far more profitable than using Deliveroo or Uber.
And James, do you think you're different in the respect of not using those carriers? Is it just because, excuse the French, you and your business have got balls that you've and tenacity that you've actually managed to realise that there's a better way of doing it? Can I just give you an example? Rightmove. So Rightmove, the last set of accounts I looked at, so anyone who's overseas or isn't aware, it's an estate agency. It's a house platform. So you can, it's called middle class porn, isn't it, James? That you just go through there and look at houses for sale or for rent. And so they're basically just an advertising hoarding online. Last set of accounts I looked at for 2019, they made £180 million gross sales, and they made £120 million gross profit. And they basically mugged the whole estate agency sector because the estate agents weren't particularly good at coming together to promote their properties. And the estate agency sector had been in revolt ever since. And they tried to set up their own version of Rightmove that hasn't worked. You then have the likes of Deliveroo, which to me is the same sort of model, that they're taking the expertise of James, they're going direct to the customer and mugging everyone in between. So I'm so surprised that so James, let me get you to answer the question. Do you think your business was different because you could see a way around the, don't say thieves, this business model of the likes of Deliveroo? Were you different?
Yeah. Look, yes, we were different. What I would say is we're very fortunate. If I was in a city centre, and suddenly that's a different story, because then it's really tricky for you to obviously park vehicles and whiz them around the city. So that is a challenge without a doubt, where we're more community based, where our local shopping centres are, where our stores are with car parks, is far easier for us to do that. But again, that's what I can control. I can control that. So, you know, we've taken the view that we are going to control that. I think, you know, I wish I worked on those kinds of EBITDA percentages. That would be nice. That's what those technology businesses do. But it's interesting when you actually look at the way that hotel bookings are moving. You know, hotel bookings are now moving away from the likes of booking.com, hotels.com, and actually moving now, as hotels are getting better at it, to direct consumer. And without a doubt, that's where you need to be. And so we're really focused on, again, social media advertising, about building our own brand, about being a community business that people trust. And so keeping your advertising super specific and super targeted within a certain, you know, mileage radius of your store is really, really important. And I think that that's where we've managed to be successful as a business, by making sure that we take that targeted approach to our marketing.
So just on that marketing side, if I could offer you £1,000 per store for marketing, would you spend it in your local paper for that store, or would you spend it online, or would it be a combination of?
No, Facebook ads straight away. Thank you very much. Wow. Just wouldn't even think about going in the paper now. You know, trying to gauge your ROI on that is really tough. You can do it, but it just doesn't really work. And, you know, I know with pixels, I know. So what I want to see is a sales funnel. How does a sales funnel work? With Facebook pixels, it allows you to effectively see where the touch points are. Where's the customer clicked on that link on your ad? Has it then taken it through to a sale? Yes, it has. Yeah. Wonderful. I get my ROI. So, you know, you need to look at that.
Yeah. So what do they say, James? Back in the what was that TV series? Mad Men. Back in the day, they always used to say that 50% of marketing never worked. You just didn't know which 50%. But now with Facebook marketing, that for it to be so direct, that's great. So look, here we are in lockdown three. Fingers crossed that the vaccine works. There's a number of industry luminaries stating that as the vaccine comes in, there was nothing fundamentally broken with the UK economy as we went into COVID. So as we come out of it and the vaccines come through, we should see a very fast uptick. So On the basis that you were, as I can say, on a burning platform back in March of last year, and you've now got onto your own vessel, and you're trying to make your way to shore, make your way to a better destiny. What's the plan? What's the plan for 2021 now?
So plan for 2021, Max. We've just, you know, talking about planet quickly, but we've just launched our green menu. So we're on a mission to become climate positive business, because becoming climate neutral is not enough. So we launched our green menu. We're really striving towards using far more plant-based protein products in our stores. We've got some fantastic products that we've introduced into the restaurants takeaways this week, which I'm super proud of, that we've innovated with our partners. So really pleased about that. And we're really going to look into strive that and add additional plant-based protein products to our menu. So that's super important. So we're on a mission to do that and be climate positive. Really, second thing is we're just about to complete a purchase on a store in Essex, which we were going to do almost a year ago now. We're opening in Eastbourne in April. We are looking to complete on a purchase in June for another store in Essex. We're also looking to open another store in Essex in November. And also there are some opportunities with some distressed assets out in the marketplace at the moment across the hospitality sector, which we are looking at closely to see if there's any real opportunities there for our business, as well as really continuing to improve, you know, the technology of the stores and how we can make sure that we continue to improve that consumer experience. Because whilst the technology is good, it's nowhere near as good as it needs to be. You know, I take my hat off to, you know, somebody like Domino's Pizza, who, you know, have had fantastic technology in place now for 4 or 5 years. You know, they are a technology business that delivers pizza, really. Wow. And they were so far ahead of the curve that everyone else is just playing catch up now. And you know, I'll be honest and say, do I have the right technology to offer the right experience, or the experience I want to our customers at the moment? No, I don't. But that is a journey which we're going on, and we're doing the best we possibly can.
And when we're a year down the line and the vaccine's all in and everything's rosy and Norwich have won the FA Cup, that's never going to happen. What do you think your makeup is going to be in the respect of walk-ins and through your app?
That's a $1 million question. Where do I think we'll be? So if we're at currently, so bearing in mind, we were at 17% before, we're now at 48%. How many of those customers do I think will come back? Let's say we're serving 42,000 walk-in customers a week, we were serving. Therefore, you've got to say to yourself, well, okay, well, you know, you've got to think that, you know, let's just split it in half. You know, let's say suddenly, you know, I don't know, we end up serving, you know, we were 13% delivery, we're now at, you know, 28%, you know, we suddenly drop down to say 20-ish%, something like that. I like to think we'll see a lot more walk-in customers come back. It's certainly, yeah. You know, delivery, by the way, is not easy. It's really, really difficult to get it right. And it's really difficult to make it profitable. So I'm hoping probably I would like to see, as a percentage, I would hope that 50% of those customers will come back to be walk-in customers. When that will be, back end of the summer, probably this year, if that.
And James, I've been slightly manipulative with the question, because someone has just WhatsApped me because they're contemplating setting up a restaurant on a dark restaurant basis. So if anyone isn't aware of this, instead of James having a lovely fish and chip shop with great staff and a great ambiance, you have a restaurant in an industrial unit, and you take all your orders online. So that I just fear a bit, James. It's fascinating what you say, because I just fear a bit that some people will go racing into this dark restaurant area when actually people do want to come back. They do want to see your employees. They do want to smell the salt and vinegar. And if you look at it on a retail perspective, currently the likes of Tesco, Sainsbury's, Asda, they don't make a lot of money on their deliveries, because they've got to have, there's so much the quadruple handling, isn't there? The product's got to come into store, yeah. And then Jackie or Fred have got to go around with a trolley and pick it for you. Then it's got to go back up. as you said yourself, it's not easy. So I suppose for your model, you if you can do the ability of both, to have fantastic stores with walk-ins, but those stores can also do drive-bys, takeaways. Is that the sort of model that you'd hope to have as we get through this?
Yeah, definitely. It is. It's that kind of omni-channel, I hate to say it, but omni-channel experience you need. You've got to make sure that, you know, customers can get that product how they want it, when they want it, and whether that be through delivery, click and collect, or takeaway. You've got to make sure you offer a frictionless service and your technology is slick enough to you know, facilitate that sale. You know, I guess when it comes to dark kitchens, they're an interesting topic in their own right. It's something I've shied away from purely because I think dark, personally, is only my view, I think dark kitchens work for the big national operators where they have a really strong national brand like Nando's or, you know, Pret-a-Manger, somebody like that. I kind of get it. I think the challenge you have when you're an individual operator and you're starting out on your own is that you don't have a high street brand to shout about. And this delivery market is so competitive that it's really difficult to then make your brand stand out and be different from what's currently on the market. Just to give you an example of that, we have a busy fish and chip restaurant in Brighton and Takeaway, which has a really strong brand. I can have another 217 restaurants or takeaways deliver to that address. Now, and that covers the whole gambit, fish and chips, Korean, Chinese, blah, blah, blah.
Wow, wow, wow.
So try and then, without a brand that is established, to try and launch a dark kitchen is a really, really tough move. It works for single operate, in my opinion. I could see it working if you're just a single operator, but trying to get any kind of scale through that model, that's a really difficult move for me.
Yeah, but I suppose their get out of jail card is to, drum roll, go to the likes of Deliveroo and hope that that's going to promote them. But again, we didn't talk about it in too much detail, but presumably Deliveroo, just like all the rest of them, the algorithm, they're just going to flip and flop depending on what,
and it's competition,
what meal is going to give the Deliveroo the best serving. So come on, James, just so we can, well, I was going to say wrap up in a positive manner. I think this whole conversation has been completely positive. So where do you see your business in the next 2-3 years?
Sure.
What a crappy question, but you know. But,
yeah. No. Hey. Look.
But it's fascinating because you were doing okay. No, you're doing fantastically well. You're obviously very, very driven, very entrepreneurial. Cometh the hour, cometh the man, and cometh your management team. And oh my God, I can't imagine what it must have been like in March. But it seems like it is all going somewhere. Where's this somewhere? Come on, let's ask it in that.
Yeah. I'll say certainly come with the team because I'm still winging it, Max, to be honest with you. just like for us, realistically, you know, we're very fortunate in that certainly in 2008 and in previous recession, fish and chips has proved very resilient. It's, you know, it's at the bottom end of the spend. People are looking to save money. They trade downwards to fish and chips. What that does mean, however, is that in times of economic boom, we don't boom with the economy. You know, we stay very flat. So our sales pretty much just do that no matter on the economic environment that we're operating in. And so, you know, for me, I very much see ourselves as basically continuing to grow at the rate we're growing. I would like to look to make some bigger acquisitions if possible, a bit of a buy and build strategy over the next 2-3 years, and continue to be, growing, at a rate of around about, 10% a year is basically where we're looking at the moment. But we do see other opportunities coming on the market, and I want to make sure that we're ready and we're nimble and we're flexible enough to go for those opportunities as and when they arise. Yeah. What I would say, Max, as well, is I think that in this current market, I think diversification is probably a sensible word. And I think a word that people have used a lot actually in terms of their own businesses. And, you know, I think, you know, my heart goes out to the entrepreneurs and CEOs and businessmen that have grown their business over the last 50 years and through no fault of their own have come into this environment and could potentially lose everything. And that is heartbreaking. And so I think that there, for us, there's certainly some element of looking to diversify our business, you know, with adjacency moves into maybe different food sectors in the future.
James, just to wrap up, my brother has just WhatsApped me. He lives in Brighton. And he's ashamed. He's been loving our conversation. He is ashamed to say that he's never been to your Brighton Fish and Chips store. He would like you to recommend what he, his wife, and his two daughters, aged 12 and 14, should purchase tonight because he's downloaded the app. What would you recommend a family of four to have from one of your lovely fish and chips?
Family of four. Okay. Well, so if I was going to go from Bankers on Western Road, which is our, which is where our restaurant is, but the obviously the restaurant's closed at the moment. It has to be, but you know, the takeaway is open. I mean, look, if you're not going to have fish and chips in Brighton on the seafront, then what the hell's wrong with you? So you've got to go for fish and chips, haven't you? So, you know, our cod is caught in Iceland. We go up there normally three times a year. We know the captains of the boats. We go on the trawlers. We meet all the crew. We send them beer every Christmas. And all that kind of great stuff. So yeah, so she's awesome. So yeah, so you know, please go and buy some cod. That cod's come from Ísafjörður, which is the northwest tip of Iceland. Amazing place if you get the opportunity to go. And then kids wise, you know what? I'm just partial to a battered sausage. I really am. You know, a battered sausage and you know, maybe our kids' nuggets are of really good quality, really, really nice as well. So yeah, that's probably where I'll go. Fish and chips, with battered sausage, kids' nuggets, and away you go. And won't fail to put a smile on your face.
Fantastic. James, you are fantastic. Your business is amazing. We're going to watch you and see how you progress in a really positive manner through the next couple of years. I think it's going to be a fascinating story. Your book, I think it's only a third written on a business perspective. Let's see what happens through the rest of the book. James, well done. Well done to you and your team. Brilliant.
Thank you for your time, Max. Appreciate it.
Keep safe. Well done. Bye-bye.